Please don't push me. Please don't push me, but y'all push B. Now we got dwellers from Cali to Flatbush B. Now they got heat on their feet that say press B. And now we so deep in the streets, y'all can't stress me. Can't curse me, then bless me. I'm crucifying my flesh, that's less me. SAT'd from preaching, can't test me. Atheists are now believing, that bless me. Yeah, we got the basement replacing any of those worldly pursuits that y'all chasing. Any of those trials and tests that y'all facing. Any of the relationships that y'all changing. We rearranging, making the shame shift. Giving Satan back what's his, that's the blame shift. Rise up and walk commands, that's the lame shift. Cheat codes for living this life, that's the game shift. All on Yeshua, man, the rest is manure, man. I'm dying daily, so I rise up a purer man. Pressing B daily, so my sins looking fewer, man. Washing the blood, so my sins down the sewer, man. Yeah, so press B with me, and let's let whatever gon' be just be. Yeah, so press B with me, and let's let whatever gon' be just be. Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm so grateful that you are enjoying this free content, but don't forget to press B with me, and let's let whatever gon' be just be. The B-Side app is waiting for you to come home. Peace. Welcome to The Basement, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Tim Ross. I want to give a shout-out to all of my B-Siders. Thank you so much for downloading, for subscribing, for being a part of our community. Shout-out to everybody in the Discord chat. Thank you so much for the way you have made this place a community. All my dwellers, stand up. I love you guys so much. Listen, I am so excited about my guest today. We have someone in the house who I've been looking at from afar for a very long time. To have him up close and personal on my couch, I wouldn't have been smart enough to pray for something like this. He is a life architect. He is a world-renowned author. He is a thought leader. He is the lead pastor of Mosaic Church and a galvanizer of creatives, of intellectuals, of entrepreneurs. He wrote a book called Mind Shift. I don't know exactly where we're going to go. All I know is this is already my brother from another mother. We have so many hood tendencies, y'all would all be shocked. I promise you, it would be crazy. But I want to present to some, introduce to others for the first time, hopefully not the last. Erwin McManus is in the building, ladies and gentlemen. All right. So grateful you're here, man.
Man, I feel obligated now to match your energy.
No, you can be just as chill as you'd like. Please don't think you have to match it. Thank you so much for being here, man.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me to The Basement.
Well, I want to give a shout out to your son, Aaron, who co-signed and endorsed me coming. Sometimes you need a family member to vouch for there to be, entry and access. So shout out to Aaron. Thank you, man, for being here. I know you had a busy schedule. You came from speaking somewhere directly here. And so I want to be a good steward of your time. I know you have to jump on a plane and go to another country after this.
I'm going to Atlanta, then back to L.A., then going to Bogota.
Okay, got you. Okay. Yeah. Well, the movements, I want you to get home to your family for sure. Can you just tell me a little bit about you? Again, a lot of people see your success. They see your level of influence and where God has allowed you to be and where he's positioned you in culture. A lot of people don't think that there's a backstory. We see overnight successes. We see before and after pictures. We never show the person losing weight for 2.5 years and having 4 surgeries to trim the body fat that hangs, right? How did Erwin McManus become Erwin McManus?
Yeah, well, I think we get the before and after. We don't get the during.
That's good. That's good. It's the during.
And
that's
the
right.
During is actually the ugliest season.
Yeah, that's right. It's very true. Absolutely. Yeah.
Because I'm in a during.
Yeah.
Because I had a problem with both my eyes, and they did surgery and it didn't go well, and so my eyes are still in recovery and I have to go back and have another surgery.
Wow.
And I had to decide. In fact, even this morning.
Yeah.
You know, I spoke to about 1,000 people with a company that's $40+ billion. And I'm looking in the mirror, taping my face so that my eye will hold together. And I have to tell myself, every time you do hard things, your brain expands. And so when you step in front of an audience looking in a way that you're uncomfortable, I'm doing a hard thing.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
I know I'm going to be on that platform. They won't see it, but my brain is expanding.
Wow.
And it's the during that's hard.
Yeah.
You know, the before, you just, you can do the before because you're in the after.
Yep.
No one does the before when they don't have an after.
Yeah, that's true. it's very true.
See, because it's terrifying very true. If your before is your after. this is what I got
true. To. Yeah, it's so true. Yeah.
And so we can hold on to our befores when we have the after. It's the during that's hard.
Yep.
But answering your question about some of my background, I'm from El Salvador, small yep. little country in Central America, born in the capital, San Salvador. My address as a little boy was Calle de San Salvador. And which means the street of the Holy Savior in the city of the Holy Savior in the country of the Savior of the world.
Wow.
So I had a very interesting address.
Yeah, for sure. And, this is amazing.
And my, and people always ask things like, oh, you know, were your, why was your family in El Salvador? And you know, they'd ask,
what?
Were your family military or were they missionaries? Or, and I go, no, they were what are called Salvadorans.
And, you know, who asked this question?
Well, it and I understand why it throws them off. I don't speak with an accent.
Yep.
And my name is Erwin Raphael McManus, so right. I have a German-Irish name.
Yep.
And what people don't realize is my name's an alias. And my mom remarried a guy in what we like to call creative underground economies.
Yes, sir.
And so he...
A.K.A. Cartel Energy.
And so he worked for a very, very tight-knit family in Chicago. And he made a mistake, and him and another guy stole, like, I think $1 million.
Wow.
He ran for his life in Miami, needed a new identity, an alias.
Yeah.
Because he was, you know, being tracked.
Yeah.
And so he met my mom, and I think 3 weeks later they got married.
Wow.
Because my mom had two young boys in El Salvador she had to leave behind.
Yeah.
And he needed a new
life
backstory.
Yeah, for sure.
So we came to the States, and he took us to a police station, convinced the police that we had been robbed, that we didn't have any identities. So I walked out with the name McManus. Wow. And so I became Irish overnight.
and it's
so weird, because when my name is Cardona, and you know, Cardona Carvajal, Mesa Sandoval, and everyone saw me as Spanish. The moment it shifted to McManus, they go, "Oh, are you Irish?"
Right.
It's funny how names change the way people filter you.
Yes, good.
And then
it's very true.
Erwin is a German first name. It's not my birth name either.
Yeah.
I was around 10 years old. I went to El Salvador. I said to my grandfather, I need a good American name.
Yeah.
Because I was constantly being made fun of and getting in fights because of my name and things. And so I just wanted a name like Robert or John or
yeah.
Tim.
Yeah, you know, yeah, yeah,
a
yeah.
good, just good, solid name.
Yeah.
My grandfather didn't know a good American name.
Yeah.
You know, but he wouldn't tell me that. So he goes on this long, like, soliloquy going, un nombre, pues. Este nombre tiene que ser un nombre de una persona que es un líder. Una persona que es un genio. And my grandfather's describing it has to be the name of leader, of a genius, of a world changer. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. It just,
you know? I just need Bob.
Yeah, I just need Bob. And so my grandfather had been studying World War II German history. So he names me after Erwin Rommel, the German general under Hitler. And so now I have like Nazi Irish, you know, feels happening my way. And the only name I had that was really mine was Raphael.
Yeah.
But on my books, it's spelled wrong because no one ever taught me how to spell my name.
Wow.
And so I went to a movie and there was an actor named Raphael and he spelled it with a PH. So I just wrote that down and didn't know my name was actually spelled with an F, because F is the Spanish
right.
name and PH is the Italian
wow.
Name. And so my entire name is not my birth name.
Wow.
So if you are listening and struggle with identity, be me. You know, grew up with a German, Italian, Irish identity.
Yeah.
And try to figure out who you are in that process.
Wow.
Went back and forth between El Salvador and the United States. Some people listening may know that El Salvador has been the most violent country in the world for probably 3 or 4 decades.
Yep.
Highest murder rate of any country in the world. And that's been our legacy, our history. And so at the age of 10 or so, I couldn't go back.
Yep.
And I felt really devastated. My brother and I were texting this week about it.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
How I was asking him, do you remember shifting from Spanish to English? Because Spanish is my first language.
Yeah.
And he said, I remember clearly dreaming, imagining, envisioning in Spanish.
Mm.
And he said, how about you? And I said, no, all I remember is silence and losing a part of myself. And because I remember the silence of hearing a language I did not understand. And so when you're hearing a language you can't make sense of, it feels like silence.
Yes, of course.
And as I was losing my Spanish language and my Spanish identity, I couldn't understand it, but I was losing a part of myself.
Of course.
And my mom was trying to get us to acclimate to American culture, so she forced us to speak English, didn't let us speak Spanish.
Yeah.
And I would sneak off in elementary school into Spanish classes to try to keep my Spanish.
Yeah.
And then when my whole family became American citizens, I did not. I didn't become an American citizen until I was past 50 years old.
Wow.
And
wow.
And I think it's hard for people who are from here to understand that.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I love this country, and I'm so grateful for every opportunity it provided
for sure.
me. But there was a part of my soul that felt really connected to that, that my Latin beginning.
Yeah, of course.
And so when my son Aaron was around, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years old, I took him to El Salvador. He slept in the same bed I slept in,
wow.
in the same house. My family still had my grandparents' house where I grew up, and walked to the same little park on the same seesaw. And, you know, I walked down to a little store. The same two women were working in that store 30 years later.
Wow. Wow.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
It was almost like getting into a time capsule and going back and experiencing that. I wanted him to know the world I came from.
Of course.
And he was able to play chess against my grandfather. So I have a photograph of Aaron with his great-grandfather playing chess.
Wow.
Because I grew up playing chess.
Yeah.
When you're in El Salvador, you can't really go outside.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty dangerous.
Yep.
And so my recreational activity was playing chess every day.
Wow.
And so I didn't realize that playing chess at the age of 3, 4, and 5 wasn't normal.
Yeah.
And then my grandfather would teach us about continental drift and the migration of Asians into North and South America. These are all things I was learning when I was 5. And then he prepared me to go to the States. And he said, now, when you go to the United States, they're going to tell you you're not an American, but you tell them they're wrong, that America is a continent, not a country. And so at 5, my grandfather's putting this into my mental system, into my structures.
Course.
And then he said, they're also going to call you an Indian. And you tell them you will not be defined by their mistakes because they thought they came to India and they were not in India. So they gave you a name that was a direct consequence of their mistake. And so he was teaching me at a very early age, people will define you, you must define yourself. And it was just crazy, the mental structures my grandfather's putting into me at the age of 5. I was leaning against a wall one time and he said, don't lean against the wall. I said, why? And he said, people will see you as weak.
Mm.
He said, stand near the wall, but don't lean against it. It will drive people crazy. So that's my background. And,
oh my,
and then my family background is my grandfather was a philosopher and an economist who was an atheist.
I can hear that. Yeah, I can hear the philosophies.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, as you're talking. Yeah.
And then my mother was a linguistic savant.
Okay.
So by the age of 15, 16, she had mastered Latin, was speaking Spanish and English and maybe 5 or 6 different languages. She ended up marrying the teacher that was teaching her Russian, and he spoke between 6 to 12 languages. So I was born into a family of like polymaths.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
You know, and which not realizing that, because as a kid, everything's just normal.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? But then moving to Miami and then all of a sudden having a new father and having a new life, and they thought forgetting the past would be better for us.
Mm.
So they tried to, my mom and stepdad tried to convince us that I never had another father, that those memories weren't real, that that my past before Bill McManus didn't exist.
Interesting.
And so I had all these latent memories, which my mom would say, we just didn't know how you could remember something at 6 months old. We didn't know how you could remember something at two. But I have like an odd kind of neurological composition. So I've remembered a lot.
Yeah.
And because of that, because they kept telling me these things weren't real, I ended up in a psychiatric chair by the time I was 10 years old. Because the moment people start telling you that what you remember isn't true, you can't trust what you believe to be true anymore. Mm. And so I had an internal break in my soul. And started having nightmares pretty much every night from the age of five, where I began having this neurological condition where I would be fully awake and I'd still be in the nightmare. And in El Salvador, I would sleepwalk. And the little house we had was surrounded by houses. So we had walls connecting the houses and gated front doors with multiple locks and barbed wire around the brick fences. And I would sleepwalk. And they'd find me walking the streets of El Salvador at the age of 5 or 6 years old. And they could never figure out how I would get out of the house. And I remember what I imagined, because I imagined myself flying and leaving, and somehow I would escape the house and be walking the streets, looking for a place I didn't know where it was.
Yeah.
And so I was just a really broken person. I started living in an imaginary world. I started having a hard time coming out of that world.
Yeah.
I remember many times in elementary school, the teachers would just give up. And when I would become awake again, the whole class would be gone. Teachers, they would just leave me there at the desk. And I wasn't asleep. I just was in a different state.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I learned how to escape in this inner world. And I think probably somewhere in junior high, maybe you know, 12th grade, I had this epiphany that I was spending more time in my internal world than I was in the real world. Mm. And then if I didn't do something about it, one day I would go into my inner world and never be able to come back out.
Yep.
And I actually think a lot of, and I know this is controversial, I think a lot of psychosis is escaping in your inner world and never finding your way back out into the real world.
Yeah. I think what resonates with me, with you saying that, Erwin, the closest thing I can connect to it is the movie Inception. It's that state where I am enjoying being inward more than I'm enjoying the experience of outward.
Tim, I know this is part of the focus of, you know, your conversation and the space that you're creating for people.
Absolutely.
It was so detailed for me that to this day, there are people and places that I remember that don't exist.
Understood.
In the outside world.
Yes, sir.
People I would miss and I would try to get back to, and places that I would search for when I was awake, and then I'd realize, oh, these places only exist in my imagination. And it was a really tenuous thing. And then when you add to it, then trauma, you think, well, that wasn't trauma, you know?
Exactly.
But when you add to that trauma, now I'm having nightmares and I'm waking up and I'm fully awake and the nightmares are still there.
Yeah.
And I wish I could tell you that my spiritual journey has completely eradicated that from my life.
Yeah.
Except that it isn't real.
Yeah.
I can tell you, my son and I were probably, I think we were in Copenhagen in a hotel room, and we'd been traveling like crazy. It was the middle of the day, probably 2 or 3 o'clock. And somehow I fell asleep in my room, unaware that I was asleep. And next thing I knew, I was in a dream state, walking down the hallway, calling Aaron, saying, hurry, I'm going to die. I want to say goodbye before I die. Mm. And Aaron's like running, getting the stairs, elevators, trying to find me because he realizes I'm in this awake state of being asleep.
Yeah.
And it's just, it got worse and worse and worse, and I had to find my way through that.
Yep.
And so I understand, like, I didn't really talk about this as much until I was around 40.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like it, and some of it wasn't really to protect me. I was trying to protect the people I loved who unfortunately, were a part of making that happen.
Understood. Yeah.
Because I don't feel any bitterness or any resentment.
Yeah, for sure.
But love. And, you know, you're loved, and it's hard to understand, you're loved usually at the optimal capacity that that person had to love.
Absolutely correct.
Which may not match how much you need to be loved.
Absolutely correct. That's a beautiful way to put it.
You know, and so part of what I had to reconcile in my life is, oh, that person loved me with all the love they were capable of loving with at that time.
Yeah.
Or at least of loving me.
Yeah.
And you have to understand that their trauma may actually create
expectations. Yeah.
And so I didn't talk about it for a long time, mostly just to protect people.
Yeah, for sure.
You know.
Yeah.
But I also felt like eventually, actually, you know, when you talk about influence and maybe some level of a celebrity or, you know, however you define it.
Yeah.
I feel like as I became, quote, more famous and people were admiring me.
Yeah.
I felt it was really important for me to tell them what my inner world looked like. Because now they were aspiring to be something I wasn't. And so they were aspiring to become something they perceived me to be. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I think I live an aspirational life.
Yeah.
Like, I want people to aspire to live the life I've lived.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to be aware of it realistically.
Yeah.
You know? And and so then I became more aware. And then it became challenging because my family would always say, we hold our breath every time you write a book.
Because you don't know how much it's going to come out.
You know, you don't know what you're going to say. And I can tell you,
I
have never shared in a book or in a talk the most painful things I ever went through.
Yep. Wow. And you've shared a lot in those books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I shared a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and, but I don't feel permission to share all those things.
Understood. Absolutely.
You know, there might be a day where I will share more.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I'm not in a self-protective mode. I make none of these decisions to protect myself.
Absolutely.
It's really, I want everything I do to be an act of love.
Yeah, for sure.
And people I love have experienced enough pain in their life.
Yep.
I don't need to add to that pain.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
You know.
I just got to say, I'm a very emotional person, so because I'm an empath. And I just got to say, man, your vulnerability is, as I sit here and experience it, it is landing on me in a very deep and impactful way. Yeah. Because, like you said, most people that have influence come to present their strengths. And, you know, for you to sit here and lead off by saying, I had to tape my eye up and then go do a talk, which at least there's a buffer between audience and, you know, platform. But then to still keep this engagement and say, hey, up close and personal, my eye is still taped up and I want you to see it. There's just not many people that I've met at your level that would be that vulnerable. It's different from transparency. Transparency is see-through, but vulnerability is giving us a tour through the house. Mm-hmm. And for you to share such a beautiful mind-like story about the realities of those people still being there and that your relationship with Jesus didn't make them all disappear is the type of reality that really helps people understand, oh, I can live this life and there can still be residue.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean Jesus isn't real.
Yeah, I think that for me, there's so many different aspects of that. And one of them is, neuroscience tells us that by the age of 12, our brain has already set around its own genius, its own strengths, weaknesses. So if you learn math before 12, you're going to be good at math. You know, if it's literature, you're going to be good at literature. If it's, you know, sciences is that. I was a straight D student first through 12th grade, so it's as if my mind didn't stop anywhere.
I was one letter grade above you. I was C.
You're an overachiever, is what I call you. I mean, why get a C? It doesn't really make you better than a D.
It's very true.
You just didn't get to play as much as me. You're not going to Harvard, bro. We're going to the same community college.
I gotta give you a high five or no.
That's hilarious. No.
Holy cow, that's hilarious.
You're not going to Harvard, bro.
But I lived in my imaginary world.
Geez. Yep.
And even though my imaginary world was created as a safe place, a place to protect myself.
Yep.
What I look back and I realize, all my success is really built around my unorthodox imagination.
Exactly right.
and it's why now I'm 65 and I'm strangely, weirdly, still incredibly relevant to the world.
Yes, yes.
And it's because my skill wasn't dunking basketballs or running, 100 meters at world-class level. It was expanding my imagination.
Yep.
And that only stops when you stop being curious.
Yes.
And you lose humility.
Yep.
And so I'm like, I have the best training in the world for employment because I was perfectly designed for unemployment.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get a job, so I had to create one.
You had to create one. Absolutely correct. Same way. Same thing here.
But, you know, even with the eye thing and just, like, processing that, I my son posted this. They run our social media and everything like that. And he posted this piece I did, and this guy writes in the comments, I can't even hear what this guy is saying because I can't stop looking at how horrible his eye looks. And he starts describing how bad my eye looks. And I read that and I thought, that's really interesting. How am I going to react to that? Because Aaron reacted by saying, hey, buddy, stop being anonymous.
Let's holla at your boy.
He goes, let's get face to face and let's see how your eyes are going to look after.
Aaron's my homeboy.
My boy's got some hood in him.
Yeah, absolutely. Aaron is my homeboy. That's my dude.
And so I said, I don't know if that's how Jesus would respond, but it's definitely how Peter or Paul would respond.
That's exactly right. Absolutely. Yes, sir.
And then I have a meeting with my surgeon, and she's like, really, I think world class.
Mm-hmm.
But mistakes were made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I also found out that she was going through some horrific medical issues in a personal level for herself. And I only found out because I started asking. And then, she wasn't available this week and then this week and then this week. And I said, you're going through something. And I kind of pressed in and she finally opened up.
Yeah.
And so I went in and you could just see their concern. And they said, you're the nicest client we've ever had to have this. You're the only person it's ever happened to.
Yeah.
And you haven't recovered and we just feel so badly. And I looked at the surgeon and I told her, I said, if I have to tape up my face for the rest of my life, like, I got this. And I told her, I said, this is not the hardest thing I've ever gone through. I've gone through so much harder. And I looked at her and I said, I just want you to know that it's going to be okay and that you need to take care of you right now. And I'm not angry. I'm not upset. It's going to be okay. And I'm driving home and I'm thinking to myself, I can't control how I look, but I can control who I am. And I can get uglier, but I can still get kinder. And I felt this unbelievable release in my soul where I was like, I am still on trajectory to become the person I want to become. Like, this isn't getting in my way. In fact, it actually maybe becomes a benefit. And, because you look in the mirror and my wife will tell you, I'm a person who really lacks vanity. And I just don't have a lot of vanity.
Yeah.
And I had the surgery because my wife kept asking me to go take care of it because it was really bad. And I'm so happy I did.
Yeah, for sure.
But even my minimal vanity looked in the mirror and went, this is going to be tough. Especially when it first happened.
Yeah, for sure.
And every time you're with a new audience, it's like you're doing it all over again. And then afterwards, when you're getting people 1:1:1:1, and they're just looking right at your eye, and they're trying not to, right? You know, and but like, and I, oh, I told goodness. My wife, I said, "Well, now I have answered the question, which is my good side." And it's like, you only need one really good looking eye, right? You know, and I'm like, I feel like my right eye looks pretty good. Look at it's hanging in there.
And, oh my God! But it's hanging in there.
But but think about all the people who wake up every day and feel like they're not good enough.
Absolutely correct.
All the people who every day look in the mirror and go, "Man, I'm just not as attractive as her. I'm not, as attractive as him, or I have a liability." And there's no question that society always prefers attractiveness.
That's right. There's no question.
It's
absolutely.
It's just yep. the reality of life.
Yep.
And I actually had this thought. That the more you can carry an experience that's true for humanity, the more you can help the world.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I can actually go, whatever level of attractiveness I may have had, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, if I was a 4,
yeah.
like, I'm a 1.
Yeah.
And I can carry that, and I can still do great things in the world. And then I give hope to everyone who feels like they're a 1. And, you know, and so it's like, to me, there's just something really beautiful in that. And so I'm not angry. It's really weird.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
they were so worried that I was going to sue them.
Yeah, or, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
always
for
that
sure.
kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
And I'm like, that's not even on the table.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm sitting there going, I get to go through an experience where I get to deepen and become more textured, grow in my humility, grow in my awareness of human pain and insignificance and self-consciousness, and it's just going to make me better at everything I do.
I think I'm struck by the genius of your mind. Yeah. And here's, because I see everything in pictures. Mm-hmm. So I'm struck by the same imagination that created this internal world to escape all of the pain of the external, and how much safety that gave you, yeah. that you could now go into that same mind internally yeah. and find beauty, and then come back out almost and present it to me. I'm just talking about me, forget the rest of the world, as a gift. Like, hey, I went into that place that maybe the enemy tried to really use for evil, and I brought you a gift. Let me teach you how to be a 1 and love it. Dude, I'm cooked. I'm cooked.
Yeah, I feel like there was a point in my life where it wasn't an audible voice, but it was as close to as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Where I felt like I had a choice. I could either use my imagination to escape from the world, or I could use my imagination to create a new world.
Yeah.
And I think all of us have that choice.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely correct.
You know, that creative power to make the world better. And but you mentioned beauty, and whether incidentally or on purpose, but that word is central to my life journey.
Wow.
Because when I was young and I was super depressed all the time, couldn't wake up in the morning because I didn't want to be awake.
Yeah,
couldn't go to sleep at night because I was afraid of sleeping. I mean, there was just no world where I felt safe. And I could feel myself disappearing. And I'm not sure what happened. One day I told myself, I need to find beautiful things.
Mm.
And it was beauty that saved my soul and prepared me for Jesus. I wanted to, you know how when you become a follower of Jesus, you try to retell the story.
Mm-hmm.
I found Jesus and then I found this.
Yeah, you know, right, right,
I found
right.
Jesus, then it changed me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We think that God really cares about the chronology.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, 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 yeah. You know, people do. He
yeah,
does it.
Yeah. I found Jesus, then I found beauty, but wasn't. I found beauty in my search for beauty. I found Jesus.
Yes, sir.
And I started paying attention to beautiful things, and it started to heal me. And I didn't realize that that's when I began activating my artistic soul.
Yeah.
I wasn't activating this creative energy inside of me to be an artist. I was doing it to survive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was like, you know, I was just trying to get oxygen
yeah.
for my soul, and it was beauty.
Yeah.
And my family thinks it's so funny because they'll mock me. I remember one time it was probably 20 years ago, and now everybody's younger. We were walking up this mountain, and I was behind everyone. And then when I turned a corner, I saw these rocks and saw this little flower coming out of the rock.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Hey, everyone, come back. I want you to see something." And mm-hmm. they all started laughing instantly.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Why are you laughing?" They said, "We made a bet that you'd make us come back and look at that flower."
That's hilarious.
And, you know, my kids were young. We'd pull over the side of the road when there was a bed of wildflowers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we'd
yeah.
go out there and we'd start tasting them to see if they, I didn't realize they could be poisonous and kill them. You know, I might have been a mildly reckless parent.
But, right.
But we would just become very aesthetic and just enjoy beauty and wonder. And I'd make them pause and absorb how beautiful life was.
Yeah.
And a lot of it for me was because it really was beauty that pulled me out of my inner world. And what I began to realize in the world of art is that for art to be authentic and real and sincere, it doesn't need hope. You can use hatred to create art.
It's very true. Yeah.
But you can only create beauty with hope and with love and with faith.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this interesting dynamic where I have a lot of friends historically who are artists, and they always want to, quote, speak from the most sincere emotions, the yep. real human emotions. And yep. I remember sitting with this artist. I helped him open up an art studio in Istanbul, Turkey. And he said to me, I create out of honest human emotions, out of pain and hate and bitterness and jealousy. And I remember looking at him and said, hey, is it possible that love is a sincere human emotion?
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that hope is a sincere human emotion and that even joy might be one? And he looked paralyzed and he said, that thought has never occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I want to take it a different level.
Mm-hmm.
All these emotions that you think are the deepest human emotions are actually the most superficial.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you can know what's superficial and what is substantial mm-hmm. is how hard it is to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's easy to get to bitterness, so it can't be the deepest human emotion.
Yeah,
it's easy to get to hate, so it cannot be a deep human emotion.
Yeah.
It's hard to have hope.
It's very true.
It's hard to love.
It is.
It's hard to forgive.
That's right.
So I said, the ones that are hardest to get to, they're actually the most profound human emotions.
Absolutely.
Which is why anyone can create art, but only some people can create beauty.
Yes. That was beautiful. I don't even know how to shift this conversation. And I don't want to. You wrote a book. How about that? Let's just hard pivot. Why am I trying? Well, I have no idea why I'm trying to like act like I do something I don't. You wrote this book.
The newest book is called Mind Shift. Yeah.
About this mind shift.
Yeah.
What was the...
The subcaption? Is you don't have to be a genius to think like one.
Tell me more.
And really, I think a lot of the material of Mind Shift began when I spent 10 years working with the poor.
Mm-hmm.
Every decade of my life put me in a different arena, really.
Mm-hmm.
And for at least 10 years of my life, I worked with people in like drug cartels and the world of prostitution, drugs, and homelessness, and poverty. And when I went in, without being hyper-political, I was about as extreme a socialist and as far to the left as a human being could be.
Got it.
Even an anarchist, I yeah. believed all governments were evil and yep. all institutions needed to be destroyed, whether yeah. they're companies or schools.
Yeah,
or,
yeah, yeah.
It didn't
yeah,
matter. Yeah, like, yeah. You know, I was like, blow it all up.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, for sure.
And it just run wild.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll figure it out.
Like, you know,
yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
I go work with the poor with that mindset, and I think the evil is the institutions.
Mm-hmm.
It's the government. It's the economic system. And so I was just in my mind, removing all the obstacles that would allow everyone to naturally elevate. And it didn't work like that. Mm-hmm. And it was a devastation for all my idealism.
Mm.
And so I had to go, okay, some people never changed no matter what I taught them. And I would change what I would teach based on how I grew and learned.
Yep.
And then when I became a person of faith, I had God, I had Jesus.
Yeah.
And some people still didn't change.
Right.
Even when they said they believed, even when there was evidence of
believing. Right, for sure.
Other people, they changed no matter what I taught them. And even when I look back, I go, I wasn't even right.
Right. You listened to me, and I changed my mind.
Yeah. I've grown and changed, but it worked.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Know? Yeah.
And so I realized, oh, it's not as much what I was bringing to the table as much as what they were bringing to the table, but they didn't know they had it on their table.
That's good.
And I just started rearranging the furniture in their mental universe, helping them realize, oh, no, you were on target. You just didn't have any enforcement telling you this is the right way to think.
Got it.
And then as you help people develop different mental structures, they begin to elevate.
Yeah.
Even when they had more obstacles than the person who did not elevate, who still blamed the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, then I moved to LA. I started working in the world of artists and creatives and innovators and, you know, celebrities and all that kind of world. And I began discovering the same mental structures and that were crippling them at the same time. And even success and celebrity and fame didn't fix it.
Yeah.
Which is why they would oftentimes self-destruct.
Yeah.
And then I started working in this more in the sports world with a lot of athletes and began discovering the same thing. And then my life moved into the world of high level entrepreneurs and CEOs and you know, top people in industries. And I began seeing the same mental structures. And so I realized, oh, it isn't surprising why a person can make $1 billion and then still lose their marriage and have their kids hate them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't fix the mental structures that actually affect the things they, that matter the most in their life. And then everyone's shocked. It doesn't shock me why pastors that we admire and look up to and elevate, they crash and burn
into
moral or financial you know, crisis. And it's because the mental structures were never dealt with.
Correct.
Their talent was so extreme. Their charisma was so dynamic.
Right.
And frankly, a lot of times churches pretend that they're character-based, but they're actually talent-based. And so, and you know, and it's challenging, right?
Because I'm grateful you said that.
Yeah. And I realized, oh, the reason we've been fairly like vaccinated to that is because the churches that I normally started were filled with people who didn't believe in God.
Right.
So they didn't hide anything.
Right,
they were,
absolutely.
They were way too open. That,
absolutely. That's exactly right.
They were bragging about
that. That's right. That's exactly. You know? Yeah.
So you didn't have anything hidden.
Right.
And so as they grew and elevated, they didn't have something hidden in their life that they were afraid would cause them to lose favor with
that's
the people
good.
That they admired.
That's very good.
But other
that's very
people...
Good.
They're elevated so fast, they don't get time to clean out the closet.
That's correct.
Right?
In That's fact, correct.
You're actually encouraged just to keep the closet closed.
Absolutely correct.
Just
That's
keep
right.
it in there.
That's right.
You
Absolutely,
know?
Yeah.
And eventually, that closet just gets more full and more full and more full. And then the pressure of success becomes so debilitating that they become self-destructive.
That's right.
And they open the closet, not because they don't want to be found, but because they want to be free.
That's correct. Absolutely correct. They're looking for an escape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you see this in the sports world. You see this in the business world. I mean, I worked with the NFL quite a bit, and what, 75% of their players, 2 to 5 years after they've retired, are bankrupt, divorced, drug addicted, or dead. I sat at Alfred's coffee shop on Melrose Place with a Hall of Fame football player who had made over $100 million in his career, who was living out of his car, now I'm buying the coffee, because he didn't have any place to live, any money, and any future. And I'm trying to help him reconstruct his life.
Yep.
And what the reason I wrote Mind Shift is because there's two great dangers. One is that you don't know how to handle the weight of failure, but the other one is you don't know how to handle the weight of success.
Yeah.
And so many people I work with actually are crushed under the weight of success.
Yes, they are. That's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely correct.
And it's easier to help a person get over the weight of failure.
Correct. Absolutely correct.
And And, you know, and I realized, oh, it's just incremental. I got a wonderful compliment this morning. And this guy came up to me. The company this morning is worth over $40 billion that I was working with. Mm-hmm. And guy said, hey, you know, I read Napoleon Hill and Jim Rohn and all these people. And Mind Shift is like in 140 pages, the consolidation of everything they ever wrote and said.
Wow.
He said, it's the best mental structure book I've ever read. And so I was like really excited someone actually read this, reads this literature.
Yeah, yeah,
would say
sure.
that about the book.
Yeah.
But I think the reason it's so good is it's so simple.
Yep.
You can read this book in one night.
Yep.
And what's exciting to me is people are DMing me going, I'm on my third or fourth reading. Like now I'm going back and dissecting the chapters. And I wrote it in a sense to be almost like a, not a training manual, but a survival kit,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. because like chapter five may not matter to you right now.
Yep.
But note it because it's going to matter to you.
That's right.
Like, and
there's going to be a time.
Yeah. Like chapter one matters to everyone who's not really super successful.
Yep.
But chapter three is going to matter when you're becoming successful, because chapter one is people matter most. Mm-hmm. It's all about people.
Mm-hmm.
And most people who don't have a type A personality believe it's all about people.
Right, right, right. Very true.
Because they don't believe it's about goals and objectives and wealth and success. And
that's fame. Right.
So they're, but frankly, they're not that committed to very many people because they're as unambitious relationally as they are financially. And so then when you go, it's all about people, you start making different choices.
That's right.
Because that means that if you are underusing your potential, you are not contributing what you should be contributing to people in your life.
That's correct.
But chapter three is you can't take everyone with you.
And so true.
And that is a part of the transitional pain.
Right.
Of anyone who's deciding to move out of the status quo. Because every single time I decided to elevate, I lost friends. And it was always my fault.
Always going to be your fault.
Yeah.
You left them.
No, it's...
You've changed.
That's right.
And that's
you know,
right.
You know why they say that?
Because you did.
That's right.
You absolutely changed.
So you can't go, no, I didn't.
No, you did. Because you had to.
Yeah.
It was out of necessity.
But you know what we don't say back because we don't have the courage?
Yeah.
But you didn't. And that's the unspoken conversation that needs to be had. And one of the great challenges, I'm Latino, you know, and Latinos, they're all about family.
Yes, sir.
In fact, you know, in our community, we have a lot of Asians mm-hmm. and a lot of Caucasians, a lot of Black Americans, a lot of, you know, probably 40 different nationalities.
Yep.
It's not all the same. Cultural pressure is not the same.
Correct.
Like in many Asian families, it's very much succeed, succeed, right. succeed.
That's right.
You know?
And it's like four jobs too. Doctor, lawyer, you know what I mean? Yeah. Physician.
But,
yeah.
But in the Asian family, it's succeed, but you're still family.
That's right.
Kind of like the white family.
Yeah.
It's like, just succeed, you can move away.
Right, exactly, exactly. Fact, go wherever you want.
If you're still at home, what are you doing here?
This is that, it's so true.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, it's so true.
But are you Latino?
Yes.
All right, with Latino families, you guys can confirm or deny, you don't have to succeed, you just stay close to home.
That's right.
Right? In fact, what are you doing going to college?
Right. And why are you going to college in a different state?
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's Mijo, there's one right down the street. I don't understand why you won't go there.
That's right. You go to night school.
And help daddy in the day at the store. Yeah, what is the problem? Yeah.
And so there's different cultural pressures. And when you're like, and so I have this Latin soul where everyone who's in my circle, I want to take with me.
Of course.
Because I feel like this moral responsibility. You know what the hardest thing was? To go to people I love and say, I've created this company. I've created this opportunity. And I want you to come and I want you to work with me. And you're going to get paid way more. And you're going to have no ceiling. And they go, yeah, that's okay.
Wow.
And I go, what? Yeah, I'm good.
Wow.
And I would go back again and again and again thinking they'll get it eventually.
Yep.
Like they'll see how my life is changing and they'll realize their life could change too.
Yeah.
And
they don't want the responsibility.
They don't want it.
Mm-mm.
No, they don't want it at all.
That's right.
And And I remember this one couple, he went to Harvard, she went to Duke. So they were super educated.
Yep.
And for 1 year, they were friends with me and my wife.
For one year. I heard that.
Yeah. And after the year, I mean, they were still part of our community at Mosaic.
Yeah, for sure.
But they just chose other people.
Yep.
And, you know, my wife, Kim's like, are we ever going to have friends?
Yeah. Right, exactly.
And so I said, why don't we go interview them?
Yeah.
And see how we can fix us.
Yeah.
You know, so that we can have friends as couples.
Right, exactly.
And so we sat down with them and said, hey, what did we do? Because we see you've made other friends and, you know, we brought you in our home. You were part of our life.
Yeah.
And they said, can we be just straight up honest? We said, of course, that's why we're meeting with you. He said, it's just too much pressure to be your friend.
Interesting.
He said, when we're around you, we feel like we have to be more. Have to elevate. Have to risk. Have to change. Have to grow. And I said, I'm good with that.
Absolutely.
Like, and the loneliest time for any person trying to achieve something is the transitional period between losing the friends they had and not gaining the friends they're going to have.
Because the lie in the middle of that, during,
yeah,
is that I will always be alone.
Yeah.
And that's it, right. Is temporary.
Yeah. But it's only temporary if you choose to recognize there are new friends waiting for you.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And part of my challenge in life was, it's hard to say this just openly, but most of the people that I tried to be friends with were people I was trying to pull up.
For sure, absolutely.
Because I felt, you know, one that was like my Jesus mandate in life.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And is also the way my personality's built.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I was always filled with people who didn't feel like they could really be my friend because the rate of speed at which I was moving was not the rate of speech at which they were comfortable.
Right, absolutely.
And the moment I gave myself permission to be friends with people who had achieved a lot more than me, all of a sudden I was just flourishing with friends.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and now I'm like, my wife said, I have more friends now than I ever had in my whole life.
Wow.
And it's insane.
Yep.
And they're all better than me at something.
Yeah, for sure. So, absolutely.
So they're not intimidated by me.
Right. Exactly. You know? That's right. Yeah. We all fit right in with each other.
Yeah. I'm always the poorest guy in the room. Yeah. Seems like,
you know, when it's a $40 billion company. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, believe me, it's painful when it's your turn to pay. I'm like, man, I'm putting my life savings down for this dinner. sometimes I have to say to them, hey, guys, you just have to realize we're not all in the same
F1 car.
That's
exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah, exactly.
You in an F1, I'm in a Dodge Dart.
That's it.
we're moving. But I have something to contribute that they don't have access to.
That's correct. Absolutely correct.
And so you have to value what you bring.
That's right.
And when you do, you're able to value what they bring, and then you end up having incredibly beautiful
Absolutely.
Relationships.
Well, it goes back to that, you know, you've got to go back a couple of hundred years to where the blacksmith was a blacksmith, right? And the tailor was a tailor. And when you needed your clothes hemmed, you went to the tailor. And when you needed a garden tool or a weapon, you went to the blacksmith. And the tailor wasn't trying to get better at blacksmithing. And nor was the blacksmith trying to get better at tailoring. And so when you're in that room and you're like, I'm the tailor. Yes, you own that company. You're amazing. And I could listen to you for a year and I'm not going to become you and have your, you know, gross annual income. But you also can't fix your own hymn.
It's funny when you say this. There's two things come to mind. One is last night, I had a conversation with my wife.
Yeah.
She just flew back from Indonesia. And I said, hey, I just got off a call. And this one business guy wants me to meet his business partner, who needs a life coach. And he wants to talk to me. He just made $7.8 billion on his last company sale. And my wife said, could he mentor you?
Kim sounds like Juliet. Yeah, you need to just go ahead and let him do that same thing for you.
And,
Why are you trying to be the dude's life coach? Go be him.
A little quid pro quo.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And so I think I lost all my self-confidence. And so I have to remind myself I have something to give.
Right.
I have something
to give. Exactly.
And, but,
oh, my
but
goodness.
It's true, though. If you pretend that you're the best at everything, you'll never be the best at anything.
Facts.
And people will smell your inauthenticity. You know, I mean, you know, the big language right now is imposter syndrome. And I think the problem is that it's not imposter syndrome, it's imposters.
Erwin, I love you. No, honestly, no. I just flipping love you. Are you kidding me right now? It's the truth.
Yeah,
it's not like, even
the
a syndrome.
You have the syndrome.
Yeah, exactly.
It's because you are an imposter and you need to get a job and you need to do something really well before you start coaching everyone else to do it.
Amen.
You know, and but back when you went and you gave the example of Blacksmith and Taylor.
Yeah.
I don't know if you realize, but you just named two of the most common names in culture, Taylor and Smith. Because we used to carry a last name based on the career passed on to us.
That's absolutely correct.
And this is the beauty of human creativity, that every other species is always good at what the species does.
Mm.
So beavers always build dams. There will never be a beaver that decides I'm going to build bridges.
Mm-hmm.
They're always building dams. Silkworms always create silk, never polyester. And honeybees always create honey, not peanut butter. Humans can be tailors and can be blacksmiths and can be carpenters.
That's right.
And for generations, it was our name because it was our destiny.
That's exactly right. This is what we do.
That's right. And then there came a shift in human history where someone woke up and said, I know we're 8 generations of carpenters, but I'm going to be a poet. I know there were 8 generations of Smiths, but I'm going to go be a doctor. 8 generations of Taylors, but I'm going to go be a writer. Mm. And what's beautiful about human beings is that we are only limited by our creative capacity. And for a lot of people, they don't realize that they don't carry the name, but they carry the imprint.
That's right.
They don't know they can be something new.
Yeah.
Something different.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's why it's so hard sometimes when you're the first in a generation to break out of a generational pattern. Because they don't say Taylor, Carpenter, or Smith, but they do say alcoholic, underachiever, poor.
Yes, sir.
Uneducated.
Yes, sir.
Employee.
Yes, sir.
My brother was substitute teaching at a school in the valley. I think it was the Coachella Valley, where there's a lot of vineyards.
Mm-hmm.
Or somewhere. Or fields or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And all the kids were undocumented. And on Friday, he said, how many of you, what do you want to do when you grow up? And they all said, we're just going to work in the vineyards. We're just going to work in the vineyards. We're just going to work in the vineyards. And at the end, he was shocked. He called me. He said, I said, hey, how about owning the vineyards?
Mm.
And not a single one of them raised their hand. And he goes, okay, I want you to take the weekend. And I want you to think about whether you want to work in the vineyard or own a vineyard. When they came back on Monday, 100% of them said, I just work in the vineyard. Because all that had been transplanted into their mindset,
that's right,
their mental structures, was you're an employee. And by the way, everything in our educational system, from first to 12th grade and college, prepares you to be an employee.
Absolutely correct. 1,000%.
It prepares you for educated indentured servitude.
It prepares you to work for D and C students.
Yeah. Which is great because I need employees. and the reason I wrote Mind Shift is that I saw incremental mental shifts that a person could make and it would transform their life. Because you mentioned Mosaic, and it's funny how you add Mosaic Church because our name is just Mosaic.
Yeah.
It's oh, Mosaic
is it?
Church.
Okay, sweet. I love that.
Every
I love
Christian
that.
Adds church.
Yeah, for
not,
sure.
You're not sure.
Yeah.
You're not sure. You're not sure. That's hilarious.
Well, that's why we should all wear T-shirts that say human, just so everybody has the identification of species. And I thought you were a giraffe, but now I know.
Oh, my goodness.
And the reason we add church to churches is we don't actually do church the way Jesus wanted us to, so we have to let people know this is what we are. But if we actually do it, we don't have to say we are. The world will actually identify us properly. So I named it Mosaic because I didn't want to tell people what we were. I wanted them to tell us what we were. And I was very clear about not putting church on it. Thank you.
I love you.
But now I can't even remember the point. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, I got it.
Yeah.
So 30 years in L.A.
Yep.
And I'm watching thousands upon thousands of the most beautiful people in the world because L.A. is a magnet for beauty.
It is. It is.
And I forget sometimes what the rest of the world looks like.
Right.
You know, I'm like hideously ugly. And then I go somewhere else in the world and go, oh, I'm average. You know? It's like, I'm normal. This is what the world looks like.
Yeah.
It doesn't all look.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Like and, Southern Cal. Yeah.
Like Barbie and Ken.
Right. That's exactly right.
And I would watch people absolutely crash and burn. And I know they believed in Jesus. I know they believe in Jesus. I know they're absolutely sincere. And they did not have the mental structures for success.
Mm-hmm.
And I got tired of, honestly, in our faith, such superficial, cliche-ous responses for how growth actually happens.
Yes.
And I realized, oh, we know how belief happens. We actually don't know how growth happens.
Mm, that's good.
Because we think believing creates growth.
Yep.
And if we don't change the mental structures of people of faith, they're always going to be spinning their wheels wondering why God doesn't work.
That's good.
But what the Bible says in two things here. One is when the Bible says, do not be conformed to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. So it tells me that our brains can actually be conformed to negative patterns.
Correct. Absolutely.
And that the process of transformation is the renewing of our minds.
That's right.
And so creating new mental structures is how life change happens.
Right.
And so I wrote Mind Shift, and it didn't mention really God really through the whole book. That's why my dedication is to Jesus.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Christians, they'll go, oh, you don't believe in Jesus anymore, you know. And because which is the book in the Bible that doesn't mention God? Is it Job or, no, Esther? Or
Yeah, Esther.
Esther.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
it's
Esther,
not in there.
Yeah, Esther didn't believe in God because she didn't mention God. So I don't know how it got in the Bible. You know, and because it's funny, people will go, you didn't mention, you know,
yeah,
God.
Yeah, exactly.
They go, everything I mentioned, our principles are going to drive people to God.
That's exactly right.
And so I began asking myself the question, how can I help in the most practical way people who are sincere actually make the internal changes to create the life they long to create?
Mm-hmm.
And so I do spend a lot of my life understanding human behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't call myself a theologian. I'm a social anthropologist.
Beautiful.
I understand human beings.
Yeah, me too.
And I understand how human beings work.
Yes, sir.
And I do believe God designed us. And so I think that the design genius behind it is understanding how God sees us.
Absolutely.
And then it plays out into real life.
Yes, good.
But on the flip side, it's like, it's not that hard. Like, if you look at the different shifts in mind shift, you go, once you see them, you go, oh, yeah. Because when something's true, there's an inherent connection.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, that begins to have, you have this aha kind of moment going, even, I always thought that.
Yeah, yeah.
The problem is that you always thought that, but you also thought 20 other things.
Right, exactly.
And you didn't know which one of those 20 to pick.
That's right.
And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to filter through the 1,000 thoughts people already have to the 12 that will actually change your life.
That's great.
And that's why I wrote the book.
Yeah.
And by the way, I know I'm supposed to mention this, that for probably, you know, 40 years, I've had so many people come to me and go, would you mentor me? Would you mentor me? Would you mentor me? Would you, you know, coach me or whatever it is? And if there were 10,000 people, I had to say no to everyone except maybe, you know, 50
yeah.
in my life.
Yeah.
And it was always very hard.
Yeah.
And I realized, and I always thought, I don't have enough time.
Yep.
But what it was, it wasn't I didn't have enough time. I didn't have the right strategy.
Good.
And so my son came to me and said, hey, he had a couple of ideas. And, mm-hmm. and one of them was creating this space called the arena. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't know why, to be honest with you, but Aaron feels a compelling mission to get my message to everyone in the world.
Wow. Wow.
And I don't think I have as much drive to get my message out to people as he does.
Yeah. And it's a profound thing that a son would want to perpetuate his father's legacy like that.
It's incredible. It's profound. And he's like, people need to hear this.
Yeah.
So we created the arena as a place where people could have an online mastermind.
Got it.
And there's an annual membership, and all the content I create goes on there for free.
Got it.
And so we have massive master classes on communication and thinking.
Yeah.
But also I do live sessions every week, like at 10 o'clock Pacific time, where yep. I do an hour session, and then we have Q&A. And it really is a space where we can mentor people.
Great.
And we also wanted to create a way where people who didn't believe in God, who are not ready to go to church, but really need these principles in their life.
Yep.
And ironically, I coach these different business people one-on-one. Some of them believe in God, some of them don't.
Yep.
But every single person that started with me as an atheist all came to faith in Jesus.
Wow.
And I never brought up the conversation once.
Wow.
Because it's like, if you're wandering in the desert and then you come to an oasis, you don't have to convince a person to drink the water.
No, not at all. They're going to just put their face in there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like, am I allowed to drink the water?
That's exactly right. Right. No, we're drinking this. Yeah.
And really, I'm helping people travel through a desert.
Yep.
And eventually always go, hey, in fact, the last guy said to me, I've been thinking a lot about the universe, God, spirituality. Could we do a session where we, talk about that?
Yeah. Good.
And I actually said, not a paid session. And I said, once we're going to talk about God, it's all for free.
Mm.
And he goes, it can't be me being your coach. It just has to be me as a human being talking to you as a human being.
That's good.
Because I got it all for free, so I got to give it to you for free.
That's good.
And so the business sessions, the life sessions, they're different.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one by one, they've just all come to faith. In our last mastermind, I lead this men's mastermind, and they're all fairly elite business guys. They all pay like $40,000 to be in it, so it's not cheap.
Yeah.
And one of the guys texts me, goes, all right, I'm going to give my life to Jesus. Will you guys baptize me at the mastermind? And we're like, he's like most out there Buddhist kind of guy.
Ayahuasca, for sure.
And I'm like, all right, come on, let's go.
Yeah.
And we end up baptizing him at the house of one of the guys attending who doesn't believe in Jesus yet, with his wife who doesn't believe in Jesus yet.
I love it.
And it's so cool. So we're baptizing him in the guy's pool at this resort because he has a house at the resort.
Right.
Of course he does, because everybody does.
Of course he does. Right.
And then he's sending me texts going, wow, I just listened to your Easter talk. Do you have a second talk?
Wow.
Because he didn't even know that I do talk.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just so much fun to watch people become aware.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
And one of them was just straight up. He goes, okay, Ed Milet, Edwin Ariave, and you all seem to believe the same thing. And I kind of want the life you guys have, but I'm figuring that this element is missing. And I said, what do you think that is? He goes, seems like it's faith. And I go, oh, you're really...
There's a light bulb going off, buddy. Exactly. That's exactly right.
And then he comes to faith. And this other guy goes, I want to be like him, but not the him before, the him that is now.
Wow.
And he's one of the guys I coach, and the him before was wild.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like millions and women
yep.
and, racing cars and
yeah.
the whole Instagram life.
Yeah.
Washboard
sure.
stomach,
yep.
the girls in bikinis.
Yep.
He goes, I want to be him, but post that.
Because
now he's like a family man and he has beautiful kids.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And now he's super generous and gives a lot of money away.
Yeah,
and
still has
nice cars, still has nice houses.
Absolutely.
Quite a few.
Yeah.
And, but, has a grounded life.
That's right.
And I just love the fact that he goes, the guy could identify it.
Yes, he knew.
And he goes, there's something happened.
He could see the before and after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, I know how to help you become the him that's after.
Yes, good.
That's
good.
It's really, I love any space where I have a lot of atheists in my life.
Yeah, me too.
And agnostics. And
yeah,
Buddhists
me too.
And
yeah,
Hindus and yeah. Muslims. It's like I just love that space.
That's
it's
right.
Just a very honest and real
it
space.
Is.
And,
it is.
For 20 years, I was a member of TED.
Yeah.
And we probably went to 20, 30 TEDs around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just me and a handful of people who actually believed in Jesus
in
that whole community. But I actually wanted to be around the brightest minds in the world who did not believe in God.
It's good.
It was just the only way I could press myself and ask the right questions and keep growing as a human being.
Yeah, for sure.
But anyway, so we created the arena as a mentoring community where you get to invest in people. And it's like, I think Aaron just wrote this little, a motto, find the self, the mind, the voice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just find yourself, your mind and your voice, because there's an underlying power that comes when you find the self that you were created to be.
Absolutely.
And the mind that God created to have. And by the way, this is the other thing that's so interesting about the Bible. You know, I grew up irreligious, so I read the Bible as if it's true. And, you know, because why, like, build your life on it, you know?
If you're not going to believe it. Yeah. Exactly.
So I'm hearing all these conversations for decades on the mind of Christ, the mind of Christ, the mind of Christ. And I'm going, all right, if I had the mind of Picasso, I could become the greatest painter in the world.
Mm-hmm.
If I had the mind of, you know, Hawking, I could become a world-renowned, like, physicist. And, you know, if I had the mind of, you know, of Bobby Fischer, I could become a master in chess. And these are all things I admire. So, you know, I've always tried to figure out how to sneak a little of their mind into my mind.
Yeah.
I mean, I've studied Da Vinci because I wanted to understand his genius and just have a little bit, like, rub off on me. And
yeah.
I thought, if any of those geniuses invited you, Tim, to go, give me 20 years of your life and I'll make you the greatest painter in the world, you'd probably give 20 years of your life.
Oh, for sure.
In fact, it wouldn't even matter the area.
No, absolutely. It's just like...
If it was Stevie Wonder, go and give me 20 years, make you the greatest musician.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wouldn't even care the domain.
Yeah, me either.
If you can make me a genius in an arena,
for sure.
I'm going there.
Yeah, I'll be your apprentice.
And then Jesus says, you know, follow me. And he's offering his mind. But we're willing to settle for a lesser mind. And then what strikes me is, whenever people talk about the mind of Christ, it's like to stop sinning. Like,
it's never in his mind.
Well, I'm going, I didn't even believe in God. And I knew most things were stupid.
Right. You know,
and I remember I flew into New York. I got picked up by three pastors all like in their late 20s, early 30s.
Yep.
And they call me pastor, you know, out of fake respect.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, pastor, can we ask you a question? And I said, sure. And I thought they're going to ask me like a profound question.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You know, does, you know, the ever-expanding universe have some relationship to the human spirit? Or, you know, I mean, you know, this phenomenon of event horizons and black holes, you know, does it have something to do with the darkness of, you know, the, you know, sin or whatever? It's like, they go, is it a sin to smoke? And I'm like, I flew across the country to get asked this question. Right? You know, and this is like, this is the cutting edge thinking among 30-year-olds. And so they said, is it a sin to smoke? Now, I did not realize all of them were chain smokers.
Wow.
You know, all pastors, but all chain smokers.
Yep.
And you know how much energy you have to spend to hide being a chain smoker?
Oh, my gosh.
You can't hide the smell.
Yeah. What are we doing?
Everyone on staff's pretending they don't know you smoke.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, exactly. Exactly right.
So anyway, I looked at them and I said, hey, does everything have to be a sin? Can some things just be stupid? And I got really quiet in the car because I didn't realize they were all chain smokers. And I found out they all stopped, you know, like that day.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
You can't possibly believe that the reason we were offered the mind of Christ is to stop doing stupid things.
That's great. That's really good, Erwin.
So there's something elevated that comes in the mind of Christ.
Yes, absolutely correct.
And a huge part of what I do in my work in mental structures is actually it's the shadow of the light of what it means to have the mind of Christ.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. And asking the question, is the genius of Jesus actually available to us?
It is.
Can we see the world from his vantage point?
We can.
And make decisions that are transcendent of time and space. Because you would never make the kind of decision you make today if you could experience the future it's going to create, if it's destructive. And so when you have the mind of Christ, you become timeless. Because now you're living in the present from the future. And you weigh these choices based on the future that's being created. And, you know, when we created the art of communication, I told my team, we're going to teach people how to become world-class communicators, but I have a secret agenda. I'm not just trying to change the way people communicate. I'm trying to change the way they think. Because you actually cannot become a better communicator if you don't become a better thinker.
Absolutely correct.
And if you become a better thinker, it begins to change everything in your life.
Absolutely.
And so I'm just beginning here. To me, the arena is my way of changing the way the world thinks and trying to elevate. And I do have a preference.
Yeah.
A lot of the people who join aren't people of faith, but quite a few are people of faith. But probably my core desire is for people who believe in Jesus to become the highest level thinkers in the world.
Yes, sir.
But it's going to come at a price.
Yep.
And most Christians think that high level thinking comes by going to church on Sunday and singing great worship songs and being sincere. And so they don't treat thinking like a craft.
Yep. Yep.
Like becoming a world-class violinist.
Yeah, that's good.
Or a world-class painter.
Yeah.
We should think, we should engage thinking as if it's an art form.
That's
that
right.
Deserves our highest level of commitment.
It's beautiful. This man has given me and us gold. And I thank you. Like I am.
Thank you so much for having me.
Are you kidding me? This is I'm so full right now, man. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Please come back.
Oh, absolutely.
I have a friend named Sean Reed who loves all of your content, Art of Communication. And I guess I'm outing myself now, but I had for months, it has been my plan to get it for him, to gift it to him.
Just join the arena.
Got it.
If you join the arena, all of my content is free there.
Done deal.
And everything new I create will go in there free.
Okay. Then I'm going to, then that's what I'm going to make him do. Yeah. I'm not going to make him do it, but he's going to do it. Because it's an oasis and he'll just dive in.
You could join with him.
Oh.
We'd love to have you, man.
Consider it done. Consider it done. Thank you so much for your time, the gift of your time, the gift of your brain, and the gift of your mind. We've all shifted as a result. Everybody get the book. You already know how we do in the Dweller community. This is the book that we will all read and grow together. We are going to shift our mind. We're going to have the mind of Christ. And in doing so, we're going to be able to fulfill all the things that God has placed in our hearts to do at the deepest levels. I love you guys, and until next time, peace.